You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Today's the 16th, the next weekend will be 23rd, so 2 weeks left. A week and then Labor Day weekend, and then the summer is officially over. Yeah, how about that? And it's flown by, just for the record. I got a letter I want to read you. A big to-do about the congresswomen that were barred from Israel. I mean, come on, you, like, if you're Israel, and maybe they're just screwing with, right, they're using President Trump's to ban them, but you know what they're going to do? They're going to go to Israel, they're going to use that stage as a platform to denounce Israel. Like, why do I want that? Right? But this is Israel, it's not the United States. We don't care if you come here. You offer us nothing, right? And you support our enemies. So, anyway. Yeah, there's a shocker. Oh, hey, we don't want you to come here. Because we pretty much know what the agenda is. And then everybody, oh my God, this is assault on democracy. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, again, in the world without consequences, that you could say whatever you want. You can line up against Israel, call for a boycott, and then, oh yeah, sure, come on in. No problem. I don't know how the world gets as crazy as it gets. But welcome to my house. Yeah. The chef will join us today. But I want to share with you a letter that I transposed yesterday. It's about leadership. It's about the Marine Corps. It's written in 1989. Yeah, how about that? And when you hear the things written in it, and then you'll, if you're into leadership at all, you'll wonder, well, how did we get so far, seemingly so far away from this? So, it's written by a colonel in the Marine Corps, the person you know as the Burning Bush, Colonel Anthony C. Zinni, who's going to come on the program relatively soon. Colonel Zinni would go on to become a four-star general. He would lead CENTCOM. He would become Bill Clinton's special envoy to the Middle East. And he's, when I think of cool people, I think of Tony Zinni. He's a self-described Guinea from Philly and born and raised there. Son of an Italian immigrant. And and he's funny. PFO. God. So, in bringing him on, one of the things I've learned how to do, or I've learned to do better, is prepare. Because interviewing guys that are, I don't know, how should I say this, big guys, you're trying to make, this is my technique anyway, you're trying to make it sound normal, even though you're interviewing, like General Mattis, General Van Riper, I mean, General Halick. Those were all not easy interviews to do because you're trying to capture what they want. You've got some structure that you're trying to get through, blah, blah, blah. Did I leave the window open? No, I closed it. But you can hear that. Yet the window's closed. That's a loud, that's a loud airplane. Anyway, yeah, that's not just my attic fan that I didn't know was there. Anyway, so I've learned to become a better outliner in my interviews, right? And then I always warn them, hey, look, this is a general outline. Like, it will not sustain the first contact. So it will get modified, just, and they're always great with that. So anyway, in the course of doing that, General Zinni, I'm of the three of them. I worked for General Mattis. I knew General Van Riper. Never worked for General Van Riper. I had met General Halick, so I'm familiar, most familiar with Zinni because of the PME I attended that he did, and then I've attended a few other things that he's done. Zinni's really interesting as a public speaker too, because the first time I saw him, right, he was this, you know, ball-busting Marine. And the next time I saw him, he was being a very, very measured intellect. And I was like, what happened? Where's the Ginzo from Philly? Where's that guy? Yeah, that guy didn't show up that day. And so, and what I really, really began to understand was his gift for communications, in which he had a great gauge for who he was speaking to, and he adjusted the frequency to make sure he was communicating with them. So the second time I saw him, right, the Ginzo from Philly, you know, tough Marine regimental commander, wasn't the appropriate character to assume to communicate the ideas he needed to communicate to the audience, if that makes sense, right? So being able to play a range of characters, General Mattis is really good at it. When you see him with his staff or with, he's one person. When you see him with junior Marines, he's another guy. When you see him with reporters, he's another person. When you see him with senior officers, he's obviously another person. So, I mean, and I think they get very good at playing all those different roles that you have to play, you know, to influence each one of those groups, if you will. So anyway, so in the course of preparing for General Zinni come on, going through the outline, you'll hear a couple different clips, and I'll ask him to comment on them. They come from previous the PME, and he specifically talking about discipline and leadership, and the moral challenge to leaders. And he goes to Vietnam as a lieutenant, as an advisor. And so I'll have him explain that, right? But what that did was it allowed him to see a unit in combat, study it, what worked, what didn't. And I think they were Vietnamese Marines that he was an advisor to. So he had the benefit of you know, while not serving, as a, you know, in combat as a platoon commander, he went there as an advisor. So he goes back as a company commander, and, you know, he knew what's what. So he talks about flying over there. He flew in to Da Nang, I believe, and then out to the unit that he was taking over the company with a second lieutenant who was going to his company. And so he kind of, you know, hey, how's it going, lieutenant? Where are you headed? And, you know, shoot the shit. So he said, we get to the company area, And the lieutenant's talking to his platoon sergeant. You know, they meet for the first time, blah, 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 blah. And the lieutenant looks at him and says, I'd like to inspect weapons tomorrow morning. And the staff sergeant said, hey, lieutenant, this is combat, man. We keep them clean here, you know. And the lieutenant said, and Zinni, I can almost quote it verbatim. You know, tough guy. Moral dilemma for the new, you know, leader. Do I say okay and go away with a pat on the head, or do I say no, I'd like to do it? He said this lieutenant was a good leader, and he would prove himself in combat. And so he looked at the staff sergeant and said, I'd like to inspect him anyway tomorrow morning. So he said, so Captain Zinni made sure he was kind of in the vicinity when the inspection was going to take place, just to see how things went. And he said, the lieutenant gets to the third weapon, and he looks at the staff sergeant, and he says, these things are filthy. And then the staff sergeant said, I didn't know it was going to be some kind of boot camp inspection. And so, you know, he goes on to make a point, and so I'll ask him to tell that story, and why he thought that was important to include in the pitch that he did, in the presentation that he did, 30 years later, 20 some odd years later. And so, right, the moral challenge to the leadership of a junior leader, and how do you respond to that? And then he tells a story, though, of, he tells a story about being out in the field with his company. And, you know, they sat in the defense, and so they're getting ready, you know, for, you know, to go through another night out in the bush in Vietnam. And he said somebody showed me a picture of mutilated bodies, and somebody else took off their cover or showed him a scalp that they had someplace. I think it was inside of a cover. And so a cover is a Marine Corps hat, right? And the baseball kind of hat that we wear. Although we never refer to it as such a thing. But for you who might not understand. So he said, I grabbed the picture. He said, I did the same thing on two separate occasions. I grabbed the picture, he said, and I burned it. And I said, I looked at those Marines and said, this shit will never happen again. Do you understand? And then he said, the Marine that showed him the scalp, like inside the cover, he said, I took the cover and I burned it. And I said, and then he said the same thing. And he said, and you know what response I got from them? And I'll quote him. I sensed a great relief that somebody was going to put an end to this. So General Zinni, you know, he's an awesome guy, and loves the study of leadership, loves talking about it. And my association with him started after that PME. And I remember talking to him about a certain way that we would close on an objective where at some point everybody stands up because you've achieved fire superiority. And it never made any sense to me. It didn't make sense to me when I was a lieutenant, and I never did it. And so I wanted to ask him, like, where did this come from? Because the research I did, it showed up about when he was teaching. And so he was in Stuttgart. And so talked to us about, me and another captain at the basic school, he talked to us about, for about, I don't know, an hour from Stuttgart, explaining it to us and what he thought about it and how it got into the squad offensive tactics, you know, manual of the Marine Corps and all that kind of stuff. So he's been a great mentor to me. And again, as you watch a guy like that go through his career, the fact that he would take the time out, the fact that he enjoys talking leadership low all these years later is really very, I've been blessed by that. But anyway, so in the course of preparing, somebody asked me, if I had seen this letter that he wrote about the staff non-commissioned officer. And I said no. And so they sent it to me. And so I'm going to read it to you. And then I want you to contrast that with the world that staff non-commissioned officers live in today. And I think the question that begs to be asked is, how did we get so far away from this? Right? How did we get so far away from this? And mind you, these are the guys that if you're not having formations, your Marines are not bumping into these guys. And you need them. And so your Marines become isolated. And so you can see, so if you're not inspecting, if you don't see them three times a day, if you're not inspecting where they live once a week like we used to, if you're not colliding with them, how do you affect their lives? And so you can see that it's easy for them to be isolated. So if you want to know, if you want my opinion, not knowing about how between 20 and 30 Marines would be arrested at Camp Pendleton for human trafficking, it is, they were not welded to the organization. And what do I mean by welded? They were not on a daily basis inoculated in what it is to be a Marine. Well, who does that? Well, historically, it's our staff non-commissioned officers, which is our staff sergeants, our gunnies. Those two ranks specifically bring it to the Marines. And then below them, sergeants and corporals. But sergeants and corporals are relatively junior Marines. Our staff sergeants and our gunnies are more senior, come in contact with junior Marines all the time. And they're really the guys who throw the hammers. They're the foremans on the construction site. So, foremans, yeah, we have multiple foremen around. So, anyway, foremans, plural. So let me read you the letter here. From commanding officer, and he's at the time commanding officer of the 9th Marine Regiment, to all officers and staff non-commissioned officers. Subject, the staff non-commissioned officer. I have been fortunate in the 24 years that I've been a Marine officer to always have had a high-quality staff NCO by my side. From the time I joined my first platoon in 1965 to my current position as regimental commander, a staff NCO has been there to advise me, to teach me, to motivate me, and to motivate and encourage me, to assure I provided the very best leadership to our unit, and to guarantee things were properly done according to the spirit and intent of the directions I gave and received. The value of the staff NCO for me has been the experience, knowledge, and example he brings to the unit. He has been there. He has successfully come through the ranks. He knows how to best translate orders and directions into efficient and effective action by Marines. The traditional view that the staff NCO is the backbone of the Corps is absolutely correct. The image of the Corps is embodied by the Dailies, the Quicks, the Bazelones, and other legendary staff NCOs of our past. These were men whose courage and expertise built confidence and esprit along the chain of command from above and below. They made things happen on the battlefield and in garrison. Staff NCOs enforce the standards, be it in combat or in peacetime. They are the conscience of the unit and the keepers of those high, tough standards that separate the Corps from other military organizations. Now, I want to stop here, okay? If they're the conscience, and they're the people who enforce the standards, what's happened? What has the institution done to those Marines? Right? Whether you didn't say that in a nice tone, and that happens in the Marine Corps on a regular basis now. You didn't say that to me right. What have we done to them so that many of them would say, it's not worth me getting after that guy because it'll come back on me? And I think that's a huge question for the Marine Corps. General Zinni is saying, and quite rightly so, these guys are the guys who make stuff happen. And to the extent that you have isolation in your ranks, what you see is an ineffective arm of the Marine Corps. And why are they ineffective? And it's not them individually, because they've already shown that they're successful Marines. What has happened? All right, the letter goes on. The mission of the staff NCOs is not only to make better Marines, but also to help make better officers. I would not wear the great insignia I do now if it were not for the staff NCOs that I have been blessed to serve with. Long ago, some wise man knew the experience and proven performance of a senior enlisted man, when combined with the education and training of an officer, made an unbeatable team. Together they form and lead the ideal military units. The key is that we ensure each of these leaders possesses and maintains the skills and character required of their grade, and that the relationship they develop is built on trust, mutual respect, and a clear goal to accomplish the mission of the unit while tending to the welfare of their men. Now remember, this is written in 1989, so it's going to be single gender, right, pronouns. Just lest anybody be offended. With few exceptions, a unit that fails or does not live up to our expectations will have at its root cause for its problems the lack of this quality team. An officer cannot do a staff NCO's job, and he should not try to. A staff NCO cannot back off from his responsibilities and get by with minimal or marginal performance without the unit suffering. The Corps, and I misspelled Corps, the Corps has always possessed the lowest ratio of officers to enlisted of any service, yet we have maintained standards of discipline and combat performance unsurpassed by any military force in history. Why? It is because our staff NCOs have been strong enough and trusted enough to carry the load without an officer in every leadership spot. The primary role of a staff NCO is to develop the individual Marines and sailors in his unit into the very best. The primary role of the officer is to develop the unit into a team that functions together as the very best military organization. They work together towards the same objective, with the staff NCO always prepared to assume the role of the unit leader in the absence of the officer. Each of them should keep the other informed. Each should seek the advice of the other. Each should feel confident enough to express his views in a professional, respectful manner. Each should understand the responsibility of the other and try not to do his job or interfere, micromanage, or criticize publicly or privately. What follows is some advice on making this all work. Seek the advice and counsel of other senior officers and staff NCOs who seem to have a working team going for them. This is especially important for newly commissioned officers and newly promoted staff NCOs. Always attempt to have things handled at the lowest possible level in the leadership change that can appropriately and effectively handle it. Supervise and inspect, but don't do the job for subordinates. There will be mistakes, but we learn from mistakes, and leaders can be in a position to help subordinates without getting in their way or frustrating their attempts to learn how to lead. Sometimes personalities will conflict. The best thing to remember if this happens is to keep the relationship on a professional level and keep the welfare of the unit and the men your first priority. Don't focus on the personal side of the issues and avoid confrontations. Remember, the junior man must always make the adjustment. Someone may be doing the same for you that is junior. The key point to remember is that the officer and the staff NCO are a team. They bring different backgrounds with them to their leadership positions, but there is a good reason for that. No unit will succeed if this team doesn't work well together. I wouldn't trade what I have been given by the staff NCOs I have known in the Corps for anything. To me, they are the Corps. A.C. Zinner, Colonel, United States Marine Corps. So the question is, how did we get so far from that? And so one of the things I think the Marine Corps has to really evaluate is, the situation that we've placed Marine staff NCOs in And can they give us what we want given those restrictions? Now, I constantly get told, oh, yes, there's no problem. There's no problem here. And I don't believe that. I don't believe that. And I mean, I've seen things that I've thought in the Marine Corps were absolutely positively stunning. One of them was, we don't own the barracks anymore. They do. So we're not supposed to be up there. They can live how they want to live. And I remember hearing that, and I remember thinking, that's the craziest shit I've ever heard in my life. So what they do up there, in their barracks, in their homes, is their business and not ours. No. When they live in a barracks, it's supposed to be, right? It is supposed to be a place that has structure. It's a military place. It's not their personal residence, right? And, you know, I'll tell you what, good units, they even go out and check out personal residences. They go and they meet. They're called welfare checks. They go and they meet. And most of the time you pop in, you know, you say hi, you meet somebody's spouse, you welcome them to the unit, but you're just looking for signs that things are extremely... You're looking for things that are extremely disturbing, that are outside the bell curve. And most of, and 99% of the time, you don't find that. But my son sent me pictures, my oldest sent me pictures of when he was lieutenant. Ultimately, he went out and had to do that because there were reports from the police that something was wrong at this house. And they went in there, and honestly, it looked like somebody... threw a hand grenade in there. There was a child that lived with the couple, right? They were married. But they're young, like 19, 20 years old, and they have a baby. There's garbage everywhere. There's animal waste in the house. And you're looking at it and you're going, are you kidding me? And, oh, how does this happen? Well, this kid's an absolute shit show at work. You know, there's obviously been problems out in the community too, and this happens when we don't have, in my opinion, it happens because we don't have leaders, senior leaders, that get their hands on these guys every day. And I go back again. I don't know anything about what happened at 1-5, but I can venture a guess is that you came in the Marine Corps and that whole, you know. You become a Marine, that coveted title that you've been told you'll never get, right? And all of a sudden one day they hand you an Eagle, Globe, and Anchor and they say you're a Marine. Well, what happens between that moment and your decision that, yeah, I'm going to help smuggle human trafficking and I can do what I want. The rules don't apply to me off duty, right? And I will tell you this. I mean, you talk to senior officers and senior enlisted guys, they don't even like going to the commissary or the PX anymore. Because, you know, so it's funny because I have friends and they'll tell you the same thing. Oh, my wife won't let me go. Because I spend my whole time jacking people up. And it's not like they're first-term Marines. They're officers and staff NCOs that come in and they look like bums. Unshaven, right? Dressed like clowns. And, oh, well, I don't know, you know, I just come into the store to get something, all that stupid shit. So, I thought I'd share the letter with you. And I don't have an answer to, I keep getting told, yeah, no, you know, Mac, you grew up in a day and age in the Marine Corps when, life was different. And, obviously, I did. But you couldn't, and again, I'm not talking about punching people, because that was gone out of the Marine Corps when I got in. I mean, did it still happen? Yeah. But by and large, it was gone. It was a thing of the past. Now, you could, but staff NCOs had broad latitude, right? You know, I call it, you know, what they called it was, they could play, if you wanted to be an idiot, they could play fuck with you forever. And they would wear your ass out. The Marines still worked in chow halls, so you could get sent down there. The armory always needed people to clean weapons. You could get sent down there after the workday. And then there was working parties. You could be always be assigned to them. And there's good working parties and there's bad working parties. And you would be assigned to the bad ones. And so they had the authority. You try to do something like that now, you get accused of hazing. They have their rights. And so that's the world that Marine Corps staff and COs. Now, you know, good Marines, they'll do what they're told. Well, what about the ones in the middle and what about the ones at the other end? That's how it stayed in line. So if you take all those coercive tools away from them, how do you have a disciplined organization? And I would submit to you the answer is you don't. And you can, and it looks the same because the covers are the same, the uniforms are the same, we can always march. Oh, so they're good, right? Wrong, they're not. Just watch them, they're nasty, they're undisciplined. So how do you have, and so then, layer on top of that, we don't have company formations anymore. So this slide has started. I don't have the coercive tools. And again, I just mean, if somebody's being an idiot, you treat them like an idiot. That happened to me in high school. I went to an all-boys Catholic high school, right? When you acted like an idiot, right, they treated you like an idiot. And guess what happened? You stop acting like an idiot. Or they threw you out of the school, one of the two things. And they were not afraid to take you down to the gym and put on the boxing gloves. It didn't happen very often, but they'd do it. And you know what? And that's what young punk kids needed to get pointed in the direction of being successful people. Giving them less structure, giving them less discipline is not what they need. It might be what comes out of their mouth, but it's certainly not what they need if they're going to be successful people in life, not just in the Marine Corps, in life. So anyway, I think the Marine Corps has screwed over its staff NCOs. And I've heard people say that the staff NCOs are the problem, leadership-wise, are the problem in the Marine Corps. And I would say this, the Marine Corps senior officers, they're the problem because they are so adverse to people screaming like, oh, he hazed me because he called you shithead and grabbed you by the collar and pulled you out of your rack and said, get your ass down the formation now. That's hazing. You don't know what hazing is. He laid his hands on me. No, that's not. Grabbing the collar of your blouse, that is not laying his hands on you. Laying his hands on you means he grabbed you by the throat and put you up against a wall, right, and then punched you in the face. Oh, Mac, your day is come and gone. Well, let me tell you, if being soft is okay and being undisciplined is okay, then it's simply a question of time before the record is written in blood when somebody gets their head kicked in. And people are going to look and say, why did that happen? Oh, it's been coming for a while. And it has to do with leadership. So I thought I thought General Zinni's letter, I've had to make some corrections to it. General Zinni's letter is a great kind of time capsule for us to take a look at and then turn around and measure, you know, leadership today by that standard. And does it meet that standard? Does it exceed that standard? Does it fall short of that standard? And so, interesting read. And I'll attach it to the post today after I made some editing changes. I dictated it. It was about 2 pages, so I dictated. Then after you dictate, you got to go back and change the word core from C-O-R-E to C-O-R-P-S, and I missed 2 examples. And then Fleet Post Office, San Francisco, FPO, right? I had it PFO, so I didn't screw that through. Anyway, email. In your opinion, talking about taking what you're reading today versus the prior discussion concerning the use of texting commands and not taking the time for firsthand contact with troops, who's responsible for allowing the dumbing down of the Corps? The use of texting is known to exist and is being allowed? Question mark. not only known to exist being allowed, but it's viewed as, you know, it was viewed as among units that do it well. It's, if we're going to pass word, we can do it more efficiently. We'll just send it down the text messaging chain, right? But what happened that those formations, the only thing that happened wasn't simply passing information that I can send via text. What it means is I'm standing there, I'm the company gunny, and I'm looking at every Marine that walks up. I'm looking at their uniform, I'm looking at their demeanor, I'm looking at Marines arguing, right? I'm looking at people being late. 3 times a day. And now you do it twice a week. So you can see, and again, but, okay, well, the argument is, send a text message and we'll have a platoon formation. Who's standing in front of the platoon formation? My younger son went a year, almost 2 years, and didn't have a staff sergeant as a platoon sergeant. He had lance corporals, he had corporals, he had sergeants. Some good, some horrible. So you've taken away a guy who's been in the Marine Corps, let's say 12 to 14 years, and you put in front of these Marines somebody who's been in maybe 3, maybe 5, 6. You can see that's a quantum leap, right? The confidence, the seasoned leader, the staff NCO that General Zinni is talking about. And then you do away with that. So now those, so you're getting seen by novices or relative novices, and you're more isolated, but we've more efficiently passed the information. Well, you can see it doesn't work. It doesn't work. The troop leading steps in the Marine Corps are defined by an acronym, BAMSIS. Begin planning, arrange reconnaissance, make the reconnaissance, BAM. C is complete the plan. I is issue the order. And the sixth step, without which the other five are just bullshit, is supervise. You can put out anything you want. If you don't supervise and make it happen, then trust me, it won't happen. Or it will happen rarely. And there's a saying in the Marine Corps, expect what you inspect. If you look at it, if you inspect it, they'll do what you want. And I tell a story about General Neller calling me in as a lieutenant colonel, asked me why my maintenance numbers were so high. And I said, I inspect every Friday. He just looked at me, every Friday? Yep, what do you inspect? I inspect every vehicle. I inspect my maintenance bay. I inspect all my Marines that are scouts. I inspect their weapon, their gear. They lay it on the ramp. And if you pass, we Sound Liberty call it 1300. If you fail, you get reinspected at 1700. He said, is that it? I said, yep. Simple Marine Corps, right? So when you stop doing those things, and then you're shocked that, you know, that the place looks like shit. And I tell a story about the Commandant. And the Commandant was touring on his final tour, I think, of the Western Pacific. And he was in Hawaii. Rolls into a company office. Marine doesn't stand up to talk to him. So the Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps jacks that Marine up, right? But, I mean, are you kidding me? What in God's name can you possibly think of when you don't get on your feet? And I'll tell you another story. When I was at 8th and I, and we were getting Mike Musselman and I were getting a tour from a friend of his, the commanding officer of 8th and I, Marine Barracks 8th and I in Washington, D.C., which is, you know, the storied home of the Marine Corps, where the Commandant lives and where we have our parades and all that. He was going to show us where the body bearers do their thing. So we go underground, we go under a street, we come up, and there's Marines sitting at a post outside of an elevator. Both Marines stand up and they report their posts like my Marines used to report on sea duty. Something I haven't seen in like forever. And we looked at him and we're like, whoa. And he looked at us and he said, it wasn't like that when I got here. And so, people not enforcing standards, right? So the Commandant of the Marine Corps walks in and you don't stand up. Anyway, so the commandant now is going to walk around the barracks. Goes into a Marine's room. Hey, Marine, how are you? Sir, I'm fine. I'm General Neller. I'm the commandant. Nice to meet you, sir. This your room? Yes, sir, it is. What's that tire doing in there? I don't know, sir. It's not mine. How long has it been here? Well, it got here. It's been here since I got here. How long is that? 5 months? So in that time, nobody's inspected this room, and nobody said, get that thing out of here? Never mind. So when you see that kind of stuff, how does it get there? And it gets there because the infrastructure that has served the institution for so long has eroded, is crumbling. And now you've created this 7 o'clock to in the morning till 5 o'clock in the afternoon job that people come and go to, but the change doesn't have to be forever. And you see all these different acted out behaviors, in my opinion, are a result of this erosion. And somebody ought to turn it around. Somebody ought to turn it around. So we'll see if General Berger could do it. All right. Whitney Houston sings the national anthem. Good morning to you. And this is dedicated to the staff, non-commissioned officers of the United States Marine Corps. You are the backbone of the Marine Corps. Everybody else can say it, but the people that are the foremen on our construction sites tend to be our staff sergeants and our gunnery sergeants, right? And they are the ones that throw the levers, make things happen, and it's them that makes the Marine experience come alive for Marines every day. And to the extent that they have been marginalized, to the extent that the contact of junior Marines has been limited by text message or anything else, that is a threat to good order and discipline in the Marine Corps, and that shit needs to be reversed. So this is dedicated to them in that hope that the Marine Corps will find a way to restore every tool that they need to create the experience that young people come into the Marine Corps looking for. That is strong leaders, part of a winning organization. And you don't create that by everybody being on independent study and everybody's feelings at the center of the issue. It doesn't happen like that. So this is dedicated to them and that hope. Thank you.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
It defines us. It defines warriors like Gunnery Sergeant John Canley, a leader who led from the front. With his Marines outnumbered, he pushed forward during the Battle of Way City. Standing tall during firefights and throwing himself into harm's way to keep his fellow Marines safe.
The only thing I was doing was just responding. The Marines, the young Marines, it shows them that it's not do as I say, it's do as I do. And just being that close with them brings motivation to them.
During firefights, when we'd be all hugging Mother Earth, he'd be standing up directing us. And I think if you talk to every Alpha Company Marine, we're amazed that he was never shot.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
If you don't love your Marines, then you really ought to get out. The only reason I stuck around that low paying outfit 40 years is for the absolute pleasure of serving alongside cocky, rambunctious, disciplined, selfless, unbelievably selfless young Marines. And the infantry got its name, infant soldier, infantry, young soldier. And I enjoyed being around them. And in the military, it's all about the team. And so if you don't know the team players beyond simply their rank and last name, you don't care about them deeply. I mean, just go up to Bethesda any time you want to see the cost of war and see the ranks on the rooms that you're walking into. Lance Corporal here, Lance Corporal there, PFC here, Sergeant there, Lieutenant. If you don't care about these guys, don't expect them to care about what's important to you. They're putting their lives on the line.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah. He goes, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain, it's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once them bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose, so you want to keep them in the cage.
Once you're out of the Corps, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me, I'm a poor veteran or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran. But, you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country. We care about what happens to everyone. Marine Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
Yeah, let me tell you, you can't win if you don't do the things that it takes to win. Simple as that. It's a pipe dream. The weather. The Brian Fitzgibbons weather report. Currently, partly cloudy and 83. The chef is calling me. I don't know why. Why is he calling me so early? Let me finish the weather, and I'll call him back. Partly cloudy in 83 in Quantico. Cloudy in 81 at Camp Lejeune. Sunny in 89. The hot weather continues. Somebody told me it was in Valencia, which is due north of Los Angeles. It was 109 yesterday. So 29 palms had to be, you know, probably 10 degrees warmer than that. Yeah, Valencia is not the desert. It's just the mountains north of Los Angeles. So 29 palms, sweltering right now. And they said it was humid, which nobody likes. But down here, in flatland country by the coast, it was beautiful. It was, you know, might have been 80 yesterday. Cloudy in 65 at Pendleton. Dark cloudy 79 in Camp Smith in Hawaii. Dark cloudy in 83 in Okinawa. In the Helmand province, I'm sorry, in the Al Anbar province of Iraq, it is sunny and 101 in Ramadi today. In the Helmand province of Afghanistan, it is cold. Dark, clear, and 86 degrees. You're good. In the Costa Mesa, Newport Beach area, cloudy and 66. Let's look at your weather. I'm going to do quick news headlines because I have no time for it today because I ran my suck about leadership for, no, if you can't tell, man, I love talk about leadership and I don't care if it's a high school baseball team and I have all these experiences, right? I have all these experiences in my life that, of young people, when you require stuff of them, when you hold them to a standard, when you make it fun, when you challenge them, they always answer the bell. They always answer the bell. And so, I mean, and so then all of a sudden people show up and like, you can't say that to me or you can't talk to me like that. And then somebody else calls you in and says, yeah, you really can't. Oh, really? Why not? Was it too rough for them? Right? Then get their ass out of here. They don't belong here because the whole institution cannot change for them because they didn't like the tone of my voice. Screw them. They're really not going to like the tone of my voice when, right, we're out in the desert getting shot at or maybe just pretending we're getting shot at. And I grab them by the shirt and I shove them through a doorway and said, move now. Is that going to hurt their feelings too? So, I don't know. I think, honestly, I think the military is, got into all of this, your feelings matter because our culture does, and the pendulum has to swing back. Up's got to be up, down's got to be down. Leaders have to lead. If you get your feelings hurt, too bad, so sad. Okay? Sit down, talk to us, we'll set you straight, and then point your nose in the right direction and get moving. Top headline, Stars and Stripes. Trump plans Friday meeting on arrangements for withdrawal from Afghanistan. We've talked about that. We've talked about that this week. Number two, Air Force begins flight operations at remote post in Niger. Interesting. Niger, the site of 2 years ago, Green Berets were killed in an operation that I would describe as loose, was not tight relative to air support or the ability to medevac. And so now you have the United States Air Force operating in Niger. So, interesting. There's an article about how the Senate panel voted, the Senate Armed Service Committee, voted to advance the president's nominee for the vice chairmanship of the Joint Chiefs of Staff despite sexual assault allegation. So, and again, that's something that we, we watched is the allegation in and of itself. In this day and age, simply enough to derail a nomination like that in an otherwise distinguished career? Or does it have to be substantiated? All right, so Stars and Stripes, Marine Corps Times, top stories are story about Marines are getting tactical over-the-ear headsets. You see these on special operators all the time, right? They're the ears, right, that go underneath the helmet. Got a microphone that comes in front of your face. So, yeah, everybody wants to be cool. But truth be told, you know, it's one of the things that people have said is the number one priority, our ability to communicate better. So, and, I mean, completely changes what you experience when you can hear in your head what somebody wants you to do, as opposed to all of that being drowned out by the ambient noise of firearms and whatever's exploding and whatnot. Another story. Two Blue Angel jets make contact midair during practice in Florida. I would imagine that has to happen on, I won't say a frequent basis, but so the Blue Angels are having a stand down now. What went wrong? But when you fly in that close proximity, you know, what happens when somebody makes a mistake? I guess you go bump. Now, I don't know why this is a story. Marines sailed through the Straits of Hormuz with an armored vehicle on the Boxer's flight deck. Well, that's how they shot down the drones. I guess maybe this is just another way to get somebody to click on a story. So, you had the MZRZ, so the Razor, right, with the radar dishes on it. So evidently they had a Marine LAV with a 25mm chain gun on the flight deck as well. Love that! 25mm, that's a sweet-ass gun, too, for those of us that have shot it. Even years ago, when it didn't have the sophisticated, you know, targeting system that it has now, it just had like a grid. It looked like a spreadsheet series of lines on a grid. You'd shoot the first round, right? And you'd see the grid line, the intersection of where the rounds hit relative to the target. You just move that over the target. Second round, probability of hit, 100%, unless you really sucked. So, yeah, it was a sweet weapon, but, yeah. So, the Navy, doing some interesting stuff as they transit with close-in protection provided by Marine technology and also by Marine firepower. We love that shit. We love that shit. That's right. Hey, one team, one fight. I'm just looking to see if there's anything else. South Korea says North Korea has fired no more projectiles into the sea since the letter was written from Chairman Kim to President Trump. Now, you know he's going to shoot more in, so I don't know why that's even a story. All right, top five stories. One, South Korea says North Korea has fired no more projectiles into the sea. So stand by for one to get shot today. Two, plans for a new base closing round may be running out of time, according to a report. Number three, Gibraltar defies the United States and releases the sea's Iranian tanker, Grace One. The Iranians assured those in the United Kingdom that, of course, that ship isn't going to Syria. How silly of you. Number four, how do you know totalitarian regimes are lying? Their lips are moving. Number four, DOD processed nearly $1 billion in erroneous travel claims from 2016 to 2018. Well, that sucks because, man, I can't get my legitimate ones processed very quickly. No wonder. All those erroneous ones are out there getting paid. Number five, shared Afghanistan interests create opening for a U.S./Iran-backed channel, according to sources. This is from Reuters. Western intermediaries are trying to persuade arch foes Iran and the United States to cooperate on bolstering security in Afghanistan as U.S. President Donald Trump seeks to extract America from its longest war, according to three sources familiar with the efforts. So turn Afghanistan over to the Iranians? Afghanistan, southern border is Iran. Quote, Afghanistan is one area where there is common ground, one source with knowledge of the correspondence told Reuters. The White House declined comment, and the U.S. State Department did not respond. Iran officially denies any back-channel talks with the United States over any topic. U.S. sanctions are hammering its economy. Tehran wants to avoid Afghans fleeing to neighboring Iran if there is a surge in bloodletting, regional experts say. Trump and Tehran both have another shared interest. They both want U.S. troops out of Afghanistan. I think we're going to screw that up so bad it's ridiculous. All right, we're going to take a break. That's your major headlines for the day. Interesting story kind of caught my eye yesterday that's in the news, and that is Taiwan. Right, our friend Grant Newsham, right, has been in Taiwan doing some work. So it kind of sensitized me to it, and I think all of us, if you've listened to Grant, U.S. Taiwan defense spending to rise with China threat. America's top representative in Taiwan on Thursday said Washington expects the island to continue increasing its defense spending as Chinese security threats to the U.S. ally continue to grow. Brent Christensen said the U.S. had, quote, not only observed Taiwan's enthusiasm to pursue necessary platforms to ensure its self-defense, but also its evolving tenacity to develop its own indigenous defense industry. I mean, it almost has to develop its own defense industry because anybody who gets close to doing a deal with China or Taiwan, the Chinese look at them and say, do you not understand the one China policy? Which means Taiwan doesn't exist anymore. For those of you young, when people talk about China, there were two Chinas. There was Taiwan and there was mainland China. And nobody really had diplomatic relations with Mao and mainland China, the communist country. That has changed a bit over the years. So, we'll take a break. More coming up next. The chef joins us on a Friday edition of Ballmarine Radio. Don't touch that dial, whatever you do.
More than 2 million Americans have served in Iraq and Afghanistan, and the Department of Veterans Affairs reports that approximately 11 to 20% of those warriors may have experienced symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. As we recognize PTSD Awareness Month, Real Warriors Campaign volunteer Meg Mitchum, a former Army combat medic who served in Iraq, encourages fellow warriors to reach out when they need help.
The hardest step was admitting that I needed help coping with PTSD. Once I did, my command and unit fully supported me, and I was able to get the care I needed. Getting support helped me succeed in the military and now in my civilian career.
If you or a loved one is coping with an invisible wound, resources are available and they work. For more information, visit the Real Warriors campaign at realwarriors.net or call 866-966-1020.